And welcome again to Reviewing the Brews podcast. This is Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And today we're kind of having a little bit of a shorter session. As you noticed in the past, our podcasts have been a good, 45 minutes or over, and both of us haven't really wanted that, but, you know, it just happens, you know, with the flow of talking about baseball. And, you know, as always, let's get into today's game. It just ended a few minutes ago, you know. And for the most part, it was a very good pitching outing by both Chris Volstead and Sean Markham up until the sixth inning where Volstead gave up that grand slam to Edwin Maisonet. But Markham, he looked tremendous today, went seven innings strong.
Yeah, seven innings, only three hits and six strikeouts, I think.
Yeah.
It was an uncommonly good performance from Markham, I think.
Yeah, and it's been uncharacteristic for our rotation. You know, obviously Greinke hit that very, very, you know, tough no decision the other day. Went eight innings, and then Axford blew the save. He just blew the game, I think, because I don't think it was a safe situation at that point. And then,
right.
And then, you know, Markham has a strong outing today. We're hoping for a strong outing from Gallagher sometime in the future because he needs his rebound. You know, Estrada, I think, will come around. And then Randy Wolf, you know, pitched very well last night. Jose Veras comes in, gives up a run. That seems to be his new thing, you know, come in, give up a run, leave. And then Tim Dillard did well, you know, out of the 10 pitches he did pitch, seven were strikes, struck out a guy, so.
It's good to see some more consistency out of Dillard. He's been a guy that a lot of fans have expected a lot from since he came up, but he's been kind of up and down throughout his career. He hasn't been someone you can really rely on, so it's good to see some consistency out of him.
Yeah, and, you know, with the fact that the bullpen, you know, is a little bit more, I don't want to say handcuffed, but a little bit more, you know, we have to have these guys perform well because we don't have all these people to play around with the injuries we've received and, you know, injuries we could receive and guys in slumps. So Dillard getting in there and getting on the job done without giving up a hit or even walking a guy, I think that is a confidence booster going forward.
Absolutely. Couple things I do we should probably mention. As you know, Ricky Weeks wasn't in the game today. Edwin Maisonet, took his place with his second home run, by the way, in his major league career being a grand slam. But Ricky Weeks is day to day with his wrist injury when he got hit last night. I think it was the bottom of the ninth was the first time he got hit, and that hurt the wrist.
Then he got hit in the 13th.
Yeah, which, by the way, that pitcher should have got taken out of that game.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know,
hitting Ricky Weeks and then plunking Ryan Braun in the arm. I mean, there's no way that I know you don't want Ryan Braun to beat you, but how he stayed in that game, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, he got hit twice too. Both guys got hit twice.
Yeah.
And then Braun gets hit again today, and then Markham hits Soriano, and both teams get warnings. You know, and I'm not saying Volstead should have got ejected for hitting Braun, but I kind of do because Braun got hit twice already. And I just,
yeah, you got if you get hit three times in two games, like, at some point it becomes intentional. It's hard to lose control on a... I don't believe that you go that far inside on someone like Ryan Braun
and just, say,
just losing command.
And say, ooh, oh, it was a mistake. I let go of that pitch. And I thought it was funny when the home umpire said to, you know, gave the warnings. Markham was just saying, you know, oh, it just slipped. You know, I didn't mean to hit him. I thought that was kind of funny because obviously it was very intentional to hit Soriano. But I don't know why you would hit Soriano out of all people. You know, right behind him is, you know, Stewart. You know, Stewart, hit him instead. He's not doing as well.
Right.
So, I
know that it's part of the game that you go after guys, but, like, you know, you get him back. I understand the kind of tit-for-tat that goes on, you know, with pitchers. So I guess if you got to hit somebody, I mean...
if they're going to hit, you know, our best player, I guess let's hit one of their best players. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of the thing for that.
Yeah, but that thing with Braun was just... that was ridiculous to me. We were watching it last night after work, and I saw that, and immediately I freaked out. I was like, there's no way that he should be allowed to stay in that game. That's...
Yeah, you know, obviously last night's game, a very long-standing affair, 13 innings, both bullpens depleted, both lineups depleted. And
yeah.
I don't understand, you know, because Kurt, I know, talked about this on his Twitter account, and then I mentioned it in the recap that I made last night. I still don't get Reneke's decision to pinch hit Greinke. If you're going to pinch hit a hitter, pinch hit with a pitcher, do it with Gallardo. Gallardo can hit home runs.
Gallardo actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Gallardo actually was scheduled to pinch hit after Corey Hart. And they talked about it. Renicky talked about it in his press conference afterwards. His plan was after Gallardo hit, if nothing would have changed, if the game would have stayed tied, Gallardo was actually going to go to left field. Braun was going to come into shortstop, and Cesar Asturias was going to go to second.
You know, and it kind of makes me wonder, you know, if we get to it someday, which one of our guys, you know, infield or outfield, is going to have to be the pitcher? Because we've seen teams do that, you know. Baltimore just did that the other day, and so did Boston in the same game, Chris Davis and Darnell McDonald. So if you had to place your money on somebody, who would you say it has to be that has to pitch for us from a platoon player?
You know, I would venture a guess that in a platoon player, I would say probably like someone like Masonette would probably have to come in if he wasn't already playing in the field. One of the infielders who spends a lot of time throwing, who spends a lot of time, you know, kind of in that area. But at that point, when it comes down to fielders throwing pitches, at that point, it's just like who can toss it to the catcher with just any kind of regularity. That's all it is.
Yeah, and that's why in most cases it's usually a second baseman who, you know, has that very short throw to a first baseman or a shortstop who has, you know, a medium-sized, if not almost kind of a full length from the pitcher's mound to the catcher, you know, from shortstop to the first. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I really want to place my money in Caesar's tourist pitching.
No, there's only so far his body can go at this point.
Yeah, because you know those crutches they kind of need.
Yes.
But yeah, obviously, you know, last night a very, very long game, 5 hours, but, you know, not the prettiest of games, but a win's a win. We'll take it. Vinny Chult getting the win, pitching 2 innings, giving up 2 hits, walking 1, striking out 2. Lenny Castillo getting the loss for the Cubs. Didn't even record an out. He really got into trouble when Corey Hart hit that game-winning single.
Yeah. And that was one where I think Weeks could have scored on the hit before Hart. Ramirez, I think it was. When he watched that, yeah, it was...
Yeah.
Rammy had that kind of bloop single into the middle of the outfield. I feel like Weeks could have easily scored on that, but obviously with bases loaded, no outs, it's a risk he didn't need to take to run, and I'm glad Corey Hart came up with a big hit.
Yeah, and I mean, he had that huge, you know, game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth, and, you know, probably the player of the game last night with those 2 big clutch hits, you know. And you know, today, like you were mentioning about... Lucroy went 3 for 5 today, had an RBI, scored a run, and just was really seeing the ball well. You know, up 5 times, had a total of 26 pitches saw. So, I mean, that's you know, consistency and production at the plate when you need it.
Yeah, and well, last night he had, I believe he had 2 hits, maybe 3 hits, one of them a 2 RBI double that tied the game up again.
And he was actually pinch hitting at that point because Kataris was starting.
Yeah, he pinch hit and then came in later for Qatar. I believe he came in later behind the plate. I would think he would almost have to. But, yeah. So, I mean, he really, really did a good job. You know, coming off the bench, he's hitting over .500 with runners in scoring position right now. He is, for lack of a better term, he is the one stable body in this entire lineup right now.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Braun's playing a big part into it, turning it around. But, you know, Lucroy, I don't think is getting any love from, you know, ESPN and all these other, you know, sports outlets. You know, obviously in Milwaukee, he's getting a lot of love there for being, you know, one of the better hitting catchers in the game right now. Because, you know, he reminds me a lot of Brian McCann in a sense. That he's good behind
yes.
the plate, and he's, you know, a very good, you know, hitter. Because, you know, defensively, he makes a lot of good plays. He works well with a lot of catchers, except I don't think he... Qatar's catches woof, though. I noticed that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when Brian McCann came up, it was the same thing, you know? Young kid, hits well, does well behind the plate. And we've seen other catchers, you know, evolve into that, like Miguel Montero from the Diamondbacks or Alex Avila for the Tigers. We've seen other catchers evolve into that. And fortunately for us, Lucroy just already has that, being so young.
Yeah, Lucroy's a natural hitter. He's a good solid contact hitter. He doesn't drive a lot over the walls. He sees the ball well and he hits the gaps really well. And he's getting better every, you know, almost every time he's up, on the defensive side, he's getting better too. I mean, you don't hear about passed balls from Lucroy. You know, he's great at blocking pitches. He's not great at throwing to bases, but he's still getting better. And he's only, what, 26? So.
25, actually.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of time to learn. He's got a big extension now. He's going to be our guy for a while behind that plate.
You know, like we've said again, you know, it's early in the season, but he's batting .341 right now, 2 home runs and 16 RBIs. And it's just, a lot of people don't expect that kind of, you know, consistent production from a catcher. You know, they usually expect, you know, like a .230, .240, .250 average, but not .341 from a catcher, certainly.
Right. Right. My dad always said that the barometer that he wants for a catcher is anywhere over, like, 280, and you are an outstanding catcher. So, I mean, he's playing off the rails right now in a very good way.
Yeah, and I mean, you say, you know, catcher's batting over 280, and that gets into a very specific league of catchers. Guys, you know, you go back years, you know, Johnny Bench, Roy Campanella, Thurman Munson, you're putting them with guys like that. And that's kind of an honor for catchers, you know, to be grouped with guys like that, because those are legendary catchers that, you know, have had shown their worth and are Hall of Famers, except for Munson, who I believe should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's a completely different issue for another time.
Right.
But, you know, I think with turning it around, you know, Brewers-wise, I think, you know, we were 13-18 going into this series. Now we're 15-18, no longer tied for fourth. We're in fourth now. Cubs are in last.
Woo! Fourth place.
Hey, at least we don't have, you know, less than 10 wins like Minnesota. So, I'm sorry about the Twins fans. That really sucks. But you know, we'll be the team up north for a while. You know that and in football, go Pack, go. So, I've always been a huge Packers fan ever since I was little. So,
as long as you're not a Vikings fan.
Oh God, no. I mean, it kind of hurt me, you know, seeing Favre in Minnesota colors, because, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, okay, he's not going to play with us, he's going to go to the Jets, but, you know, he goes to Minnesota, and I'm just like, that's like a stab in the heart, because, you know...
Oh, good Lord, it was a war zone up here. I live in the heart of Packers country. It was an absolute war zone here. Families just divided amongst each other. It was horrible.
It kind of sounds like the March Madness, you know, with like, ACC basketball, especially, because my parents used to live in North Carolina where I was born. And they said, you know, before that it was, you know, ACC basketball and college basketball was a religion. So sports becomes, you know, kind of religions for people. And I think, you know, like they were talking about today, and I thought the Fox announcers were kind of, you know, out there, if you watch the Fox at all. But they did make a good point in saying that the Brewers-Cubs, you know, rivalry is becoming a more prominent rivalry, like the Dodgers, Giants, or Yankees-Red Sox.
It is. There's not a whole lot of... There isn't a whole lot of history behind it, you know, the same way that there would be in, like, a Cubs-White Sox or, you know, like, Yankees-Red Sox kind of, you know, that kind of rivalry. It doesn't have that history at all, but because it was more contrived out of geographical necessity. Yeah. But it is becoming a lot of fun for fans and, you know, for everyone, so.
And no pun intended, I mean, it's kind of brewing, you know, at this point.
Yes.
I mean... It has time to, you know, come into this huge rivalry, and I think it will, because obviously the big one in the NL Central right now, I still think, is Cardinals-Reds, you know, when they had that nasty fight, I think it was last year or the year before that, you know, Johnny Cueto kicked some guy in the head, and just, it was an ugly fight.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, the Brewers-Cardinals is obviously always a rivalry, going back to the Sud Series in 82, but, yeah, no, there's, and this division is going to be... I've said it before, I think in a couple years, from top to bottom, this will be the most competitive division in baseball if everything keeps going the way that it's going.
Yeah, and I think with Houston out of the equation, you know, I think it adds a lot because the Pirates can only get better from here. The Cubs, you know, will eventually turn around. And the Brewers, Cardinals, and Reds are very, you know, constant forces in the NL Central. So, yeah, it can be a very, very competitive, you know, division. Obviously, the most competitive right now, I think, is probably the AL East, because you have Baltimore, who's in the lead. Toronto, who's not far behind. The Rays are up there. So, I mean, I think, potentially, the shift will translate from the NL East, you know, with the Phillies and the Braves and all that crap, Yeah. I'm sick of hearing about how great the NL East is and how they're always on ESPN Monday night, Wednesday night baseball.
And that's just a market bias. That's that is.
You switch it to the NL Central, especially, you know, with Brewers-Reds matchups or Brewers-Cardinals matchups or Reds-Cardinals matchups, it gets really intense.
Yeah.
You know, I really thought, you know, another guy gets hit or something today, there was going to be a fight breaking out. And I kind of wanted to see it because I kind of like that in baseball. I think it's a little bit interesting.
But, yeah, when the tempers start to flare like that, it gets it's something you don't see all the time. But cooler heads did prevail throughout the Cubs series. But we'll see how it goes the next time we play them.
Yeah, we do have two more games. Oh, no, one more game. I'm sorry. I'm really tired today. We do have one more game against them tomorrow. It's 2:10 Eastern Time, 1:10 Central Time. Jeff Sommer, I can't pronounce his last name.
Samardzija?
Yeah, I think that's it. Against Marco Estrada. Samardzija is 4-1 the year with a 3.03 ERA, while Marco Estrada is 0-2 with a 4.5 ERA. What do you expect out of this matchup?
You know, Estrada's always kind of a wild card. I think right now, you know, coming off a big extra innings win and then just really a dominating offensive performance that we had today, I think everything's going well. I think the Brewers take it and, you know, sweep the Cubs. But Smarts, he's a good pitcher. So it's not going to be easy for the Brewers. But again, I think they're rolling right now, and I think it's going to go well. Plus, it's Yovani Gallardo bobblehead day on Sunday. So, and the Brewers generally perform pretty well on bobblehead days.
Well, there's something, you know, and you know, talking about Samardzija, you know, he did come from the bullpen, you know, is now starting for the Cubs. You know, because I think at one point in time, 2-3 years ago, maybe not even that far back, he was, I think, in, you know, contention for the closer role, which, you know, went to Carlos Marmol, who's now on the DL, and I think is with Rafael Dolis, who pitched last night, and we caught a few hits off of him and scored a few runs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, you know, the way the Brewers have been going, you know, there's just no really stopping them right now, especially with the heart of the lineup, you know, performing, you know, Lucroy, Braun, Ramirez, Hart. And, you know, I do like the fact that Renicki has Lucroy batting second. I think that is perfect. You know, with Gamel out, we had him, you know, you and I had him batting first. Okay,
yeah.
So the power's not there anymore at the top of the lineup. We can't have Ricky Weeks up there. He's hurt. He's day-to-day. He just doesn't do well as an overall leadoff man. Nigel Morgan, I don't really like his leadoff man. I like him better, you know, farther down the lineup. I think Lucroy, I don't think he should be the leadoff man, but I like him at second, though. I like him
in a position where he can move runners around. I like that a lot. I don't mind Morgan leading off just because, you know, and to borrow one of his phrases, the plush dementals, you know, he is, yeah. When he gets his fundamentals down, he's very sound bunter. He's a very good base runner. I don't have a huge issue with him being the leadoff as long as he can string together some hits.
Yeah, and he did have that, you know, nice double to left today, and, you know, he ended up scoring a run later in the game. But,
yeah.
You know, I still feel, even though he doesn't play as much, I still feel Nori needs to, and he does start, lead off. And he has before, but
yeah.
I just think he needs to play a little bit more. I think not playing him, you know, really discredits his potential, because he did get an RBI today, I believe, and, excuse me, I just feel he needs to start. I just get that feeling, you know, with Gomez out, you know, we have this time to see, well, who deserves the center field position more, Morgan or Nori? And I think, you know, just saying it, you know, gun to your head, I think Nori should get it. But you play the two, you know, you play Morgan one day, then you play Nori, then you play Morgan, then you play Nori. You see which one's more consistent. And maybe,
yeah.
Maybe even put one, you know, maybe if you want to give Corey Hart a day off, put one in left, put one in right, put one in center, or same thing if Braun gets a day off, and then you can see which one fares better out there and in the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. I think overall, Nori's the better. I think he's the better all-around outfielder, for sure, defensively, and I think he's a better hitter. But the thing with Nori is coming from Japan, they very much have a do what it takes for the team mentality, there. Especially with their athletes. So, you know, it's not something where, like, he feels like he needs the time, you know? He's willing to do whatever it takes to help the Brewers win. He came here to be part of a major league team, and that's what he's doing. And he seems fairly content in that. But I think with the amount of money, with the amount of prestige that came with his career, I think he deserves more playing time for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm not discrediting Morgan. I'm just saying this because he's kind of in a slump right now. And, you know, the thing that I like about Nigel Morgan is that he brings so much life into the game. You know, with the whole Tony Plush thing, he brings so much life into the Brewers, you know, dugout and clubhouse. And obviously, once Gomez gets back, it gets even harder, you know, to decide who plays out in center.
Right.
But I think right now, you know, with every position that, you know, because shortstop's still a toss-up between, you know, this Turris and maybe even Conrad. And I think, you know, this is the time of the year. It's still a little bit early. We haven't had many divisional games yet.
Right.
But Reinicke needs to experiment and say, well, I'm going to try him here. Okay, he does well, you know, put him there for three games. He does well. Maybe he should play that position overall. You know, I think that's what they found out with Travis Ishikawa as well, is I think he's going to be our first baseman for the rest of the year. And I have no complaints about that. He went 2-for-3 today. Scored 2 runs, was walked once. And I think, you look at the average, 217, it's because he doesn't play every day. And you don't play every day, you don't get as many at-bats, and you don't, you know, you go 0-for-4 in a day, you do play. It obviously hurts your average, but you know, he did well when he was with the Giants. So I think, you know, with Gamel out, he's the guy we have to go to. You know, obviously put Taylor Green in there some days, you know, to get him used to playing up here, or just days that Ishikawa needs off. But I think Ishikawa is our main man at first.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that either. You know, he's not exactly what I'd like, and we talked, well, I talked on the website earlier about, you know, the Brewers rumors swirling around. I don't think they're actively looking for anyone to replace that first baseman position, because I don't think anyone's really, for the money and for the people we'd have to give up, I don't think you'd find anyone that is really a considerable step up from Ishikawa at this point.
No, and plus, that's placing a lot of trust in Matt Gamel, a lot of trust that I think we've, you know, it's mutual that we have earned from Gamel and Gamel's earned from us.
Right.
So I think that's a little bit of respect to him as well. And plus, like we've talked to before, you know, obviously we can't go out and try to get everybody because we don't have the money, and B, the money we do have, we're trying to, you know, keep guys that are free agents like Greinke. And it's not going to be easy to keep them because they're going to ask for more money the better they do.
Right.
So, you know, and I think adding to that, I think, you know, I mentioned this the other day. I just wanted your take on it. I think that Brooks Conrad maybe should try out shortstop because he's an infield player. He's played first, second, and third. So why not shortstop? So yeah, I mean, it's a shorter throw than third base. It's a little bit more active, but it boils down to who would you rather have at shortstop at this point? Is Turris or Conrad?
You know, it really pains me to say this because you know I'm not a biggest Turris fan, but you have to go with the veteran hand at that point. Shortstop is such an important position, and you have so much to do while you're there in terms of covering bases, making throws, you know, and just the amount of both mental and physical energy it takes to field that position. I think you have to go with the veteran until, you know, if you can give Conrad some shortstop starts down in the minor leagues where you're not throwing him into the wolves so much. You know, maybe he can mold himself into a shortstop. Or someone like Scooter Gannett down in AA right now. You know, start to transition him to shortstop. That's where that transition has to take place.
Yeah, because obviously losing Alex Gonzalez is huge for us. You know, he's one of the three guys we've lost for the season now at this point.
Yeah, and just...
And it's just, like you said, you know, it pains you to say that. I understand putting a Turris there. But, I think we can experiment around at this point still. I mean, certainly play him 5 days a week out of the seven. And,
right.
And maybe try Conrad there. Because, I mean, I think you do have to throw them, you know, in the road sometimes and get them used to that because that's the way they get used to it. Guys who come up from AA into the majors that don't go through AAA don't have, you know, that experience because you do have very few players in AA that have been in the majors and are sent back down, but a lot of them are sent to AAA. So, I mean, I think that transition is kind of critical in a sense, but I think it's no different if you had a guy come up from Double A and put him in, as if you had a guy who's never really played a position but has been in the major leagues.
Right.
So, I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make, really. But an interesting fact just about Luke Hoy, again, he's batting .550 this year with runners in scoring position. And that's very evident.
Yeah, he's. I mean, when there are runners on, he's the guy you hope is coming up right now. And I mean, you're always going to lean on guys like Braun and Corey and Ricky when he gets back and is healthy again. But you know, someone like Luke Roy is just. I mean, it's time to start talking about him as a serious offensive, you know, production.
Yeah, and also a note about him: he has a 9-game hitting streak going on, and in his last 4 games has 6 RBIs. So he's just really on a tear right now. And it's just it's something we need as a turnaround because, you know, after Masonette hits that grand slam and it's 6-1, I'm gonna be honest, I still was not comfortable with that because I knew at some point Renicky's gonna pull Markham. It's just a matter of when. And then Varus comes in and I'm just like, oh boy. Because Varus has not done well. You know, he did well up until the end of April, and then like April 25th hits and his ERA goes from below 2 to over 7.
Right.
So, it's really been luck of the draw, honestly, with our bullpen. And I think, you know, with the offensive production and giving them more of those comfortable leads, they can go in and, you know, they'll give up a run, but they'll realize, I can still work myself out of this. And that gives them confidence because, you know, I do agree there's a certain point when a guy needs pulled. But if you pull him too much, he'll never be able to work himself out of that kind of situation.
Right.
So I think, you know, Renicky knows what he's doing with this, but I don't understand really taking out Markham. He was only at 105 pitches, and you think that sounds like a lot, but he could have at least gone, you know, in well into the eighth, maybe an hour or two, I believe. I think the way Markham was pitching certainly was a credit to that.
I think he could have done that, but I think at some point you have to you have to not cut your losses necessarily, but you know what I mean? You have to say, like, okay, he's done. What more could he have done at that point? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's true in a sense, but with last night's game, it's just... Because, I mean, we don't get a break after this. I mean, we're playing games consecutively in a row. So, I mean, it's hard on bullpen guys because people think, well, they only pitch, you know, an inning, you know. But that wears and tears on you because, you know...
Yeah.
It's the mental aspect of it. It's the physical aspect of it that takes a lot into it. So, I mean, obviously, very, very happy with Markham's performance today. He did very well, went 7 innings, did pretty much give the bullpen a day off except for Varus and Dillard. But, I mean, obviously, you can't really ask for a better start. You can, you know, no runs, but, I mean, I'm not going to nitpick there. That's a very good outing by Sean Markham, and that's definitely what we needed. And, I mean, the series of Cincinnati didn't go as planned. The series of San Francisco didn't go as planned. We faced, you know, 2 good teams there, one with good pitching, one with good offense and pitching.
Right.
And so I think this Cubs series is kind of a rebound because, you know, last time we played them, we did win 3 out of 4, so maybe we can sweep them this time and make it the series. And then we do play the Mets for 2 games and Houston for 2 games. So it's not necessarily easy games upcoming, but I think it's what we need to rebound from our slump.
Yeah, I think the Brewers, I think you're going to start to see them put it together here. We talked about this last week, too. These upcoming series are ones that the Brewers can easily take and that they need to take. So I think you're really going to see things start to move better going forward.
Yeah, and the bullpen will settle down at some point, and we hope it does because, you know, I know it will, and obviously the starting week rotation will figure out their problems sooner, I believe, because they pitch every day. You know, with Greinke and Markham getting back on track, you know, Wolf really has not done bad this year. He just isn't talked about that much. He's had, you know, he usually is a 6-inning guy, and that's what we need. Gallardo has his ups and downs, and Estrada, like you said, is the wild card here.
Yeah. So,
well, I think we got, you know, what we wanted to talk about today pretty well in detail. Obviously, we can't talk about, you know, a lot of things, but I think, you know, this was enough to talk about for today. So, good discussion, and yeah.
Absolutely. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.